Hi, I'm Dr. Mila Burjic, and today I'm joined with Dr. Shane Kinnear on the Optometric Insights Show, where we're going to be talking about diagnostics and therapeutics that are changing the game in optometry. Dr. Shane Kinnear, thank you for being back on the show. And if you could just for the audience, give them a little bit of a background on yourself, your practice, and everything.
Yeah, thanks for having me back. It's always great to talk to you. I practice in Southeast Kansas, in Pittsburgh, Kansas. We're about an hour and a half south of Kansas City. We have a primary care office, four doctors, our fifth joining in June. We started in 2009. And being rural, we handle all the primary care, eye care that you would think of. We really don't have a surgeon that lives in our area. And I also have a very large clinical research arm. I shouldn't say very large, a clinical research arm, where we currently have about 10 studies going and three people dedicated to research.
Shane, you're a rock star. You know, you may or may not be aware of this because you sometimes do or don't know what's being said about you when you're not there. But there are even sales consultants, sales representatives, professional relations people that say, yeah, there's this doctor. He's got this really big practice in Kansas and he does a lot of research there. I go, yeah, Dr. Kinnear. Yeah, that's him. And they all know about you because of, again, the patient care that you provide. But cutting edge wise, I mean, what you're doing with the research is just awesome. So Shane, let's dig into this because I know that you're one that embraces technologies and you are one that really kind of takes it to the next level. So there are new diagnostics that are changing the way that we're functioning and caring for our patients. Share with me a little bit about some of those diagnostic technologies that you're excited about currently.
Yeah, and I think it's new and better utilization of what we have. So we're seeing improved wide field imaging, we're seeing autofluorescence, and really even as simple as OCT and some of our glaucoma testing has really improved to the point where we can manage patients or diagnose and treat earlier than we've ever been able to before. That space and our ability as a profession to first diagnose disease, to interpret. And I think what's really so important, this technology allows us to better co-manage with our retina docs and our cornea docs, especially in a rural area. I'm able to capture images and share those with those doctors, limit visits that happen, but it doesn't just have to be rural. There's such a increase of our aging patients and such an increased need for eye care. These technologies, I think, move our profession forward.
You're so right, Shane. I think too, like even with the advent of new therapeutics for geographic atrophy, I think it's becoming more incumbent upon us, the primary eye care practitioner, to determine when those patients are early and to develop those relationships with retinologists so that we even know too, hey, when should we think about referring these patients for potential treatment? Because again, retina specialists are inundated with the amount that they have at this point because all of the wet AMD and all the other treatments that they're performing in the eye. Wouldn't you agree?
I would. And that's such a great example because, you know, one drug's been approved, another one's shortly approved for geographic atrophy, but they reverse nothing. So it's incumbent on us to know early on, and is that foveal threatening disease, and get those patients sent to the retinologist for treatment, because once it's too late, it's too late.
You touched on OCT as well too, Shane. I think we both remember a time when we were kind of debating whether or not we should invest in either time domain or spectral domain. You know, now that conversation's a moot point because we're all spectral domain or even higher technologies in that. And now we can actually see vasculature. I think that's changing the way we're managing our AMD patients, our diabetic patients, our glaucoma patients. Tell us a little bit about how you're incorporating these new technologies in your practice.
Well, you touched on OCTA, and that's a big one for us. We have a fairly large diabetic population, but for many of those patients, it's hard to go the 2 hours to a retinologist. And we've developed this relationship where by capturing OCTA, I can A, see do they need to be sent up for their primary referral. And I really feel like the biggest boon to my practice, we see that vessel drop out earlier, and I can work with primary care here local to say, gosh, their A1C needs to come down. And I, you know, patients, we've all had the patient with the large diet Dr. Pepper and the candy bar that's an uncontrolled diabetic. But I think when we sit down and talk to them and say, do you want to lose vision? Because that's where we're headed. and can show them a picture, I really feel like our primary care feels like we reinforce that message and really bring it home.
The foveal vascular zone enlarging in some of these diabetic patients, even before we're seeing some of the visible, or what I would even call at this point, traditional retinopathy, is remarkable to me. And we're doing the exact same thing. And I just ultimately think that's going to be better long-term outcomes for our patients, and also to the way they team up with the healthcare profession and society. Meaning, I think when we can reinstill some of the importance of what the physician's recommendations are in our office based on what we're seeing, I just think it takes the seriousness of the condition to another level, so that they're, it may not change their habits, Shane. I mean, listen, I'm a realist as much as I am a practitioner, but it may make them think twice about some of those habits that they are having that they know they may not necessarily should be doing because of that. So Shane, let's talk about therapeutics. Like, what's in the therapeutic realm that's getting you excited now? Like, what do we have now that's exciting you, that's new? And what's coming down the pipe that you feel like, I'm really excited to have an opportunity to utilize this on some patients?
There's so much happening right now. You know, first of all, Vuity launched, and that's been great for our patients in the presbyopic space. But I've said all along, that's the first pharmaceutical way to treat. It's not the last. And we're really seeing some emerging technologies, and that space is going to continue to grow for us. And that is not going to get anything but better and better. I think if I could give one quick take home, probably 3 years ago, I was in a discussion with Tarsus, and they asked me about the presence of Demodex. And in that conversation, they said, just have your patients look down and lift the lid. I'm amazed how many collarettes I was missing by not doing that. So I think Tarsus coming to market and allowing us to actively treat Demodex, not just put a patch on with a lid scrub, that's going to change a lot for our patients. And then I've always been a dry eye practitioner. I really like that space. It goes well with contact lenses and a lot of what we see. And we're seeing this kind of resurgence in the dry eye space. There's new drugs that are coming to market that impact different pathways. And I think it's going to give us a great opportunity to improve outcomes. And, you know, the message I give often is, we don't think about, we see dry eye every day, so it's easy to say, here's a tear, move on. But try holding your eyes open for 20 seconds. See how your vision blurs. See what that feels like. Dry eye patients have a big impact in their quality of life. Screen time's up. It's up to 13 hours a day for the average adult in the United States. All those things together mean we can really impact our patients.
I couldn't agree with you more, Shane. What's interesting, you know, to dig a little deeper on a few of these, the presbyopic market's interesting because there are a lot of different versions of miotics that we're going to be seeing having their effect. There was one kind of different mechanism, which was the lens softening, so to speak, that unfortunately isn't a candidate or isn't being explored anymore. So we are going to have different opportunities to provide these options for patients, hopefully lasting longer with a single dose or single drop. I know that Vuity recently received FDA approval for a BID dosing regimen as well, too. I'll tell you, Shane, it's funny you bring up the look down and seeing the Demodex, because one of the things that I'll share with you, I think I was mistaught at the time in optometry school, which is between the years of 98 and 2002, because I was taught to look at the lid margin on a low magnification with a wide beam. And I will tell you that literally, in addition to looking down, also taking a closer look at the lid margins with either a medium or a high magnification view has completely changed my respect for what's happening at the ocular surface. Because again, when you look at some of these lids at low mag, they're not necessarily impressive or anything that we feel would be causing any type of ocular surface changes. But when you take that magnification and you turn it up, just like you said, with the looking down and pulling up that upper lid, it really makes a massive difference in what you're seeing. And I think that's going to be another game changer for us as well, too.
Yeah. And I think, you know, a little older technology, just a few years, and whether you want to talk about tear care, LipiFlow, Alcon's product, meibomian gland disease is real. And you know, you can tell patients doxy and warm compresses and do it for 90 to 100 days. I don't know how your compliance is. Mine isn't great. And I think we're really, in our office, we've evolved that protocol. We found ways to make those lid treatments work better. I think when they first came to market, we were all like, well, does it help them and how much? And we found some kind of key takeaways that both improves the impact and the durability of that treatment that really gives benefit. And, you know, I also think we shifted our demographic. We were all looking at the 60-year-old with advanced MGD. And I don't, that shit may be hard to write, but if you take the 40-year-old contact lens wearer, you can have a big impact.
What are some of the things, Shane, that you've done to affect the durability of those treatments? Meaning, I'm a patient, I'm saying, all right, Dr. Kinar, you're telling me that I need this treatment, this is in my best interest. What are some of the strategies that you're putting in place to give those treatments durability and more longevity, so to speak?
Well, the first thing we're doing is our pre-treatment regimen. And we're looking at a couple things, but what we're doing right now is trying to get the patients on a topical immunosuppressive, usually Restasis, Xiidra, Cequa, any of those three, for a good 3 to 4 months before we institute lid treatment. We kind of suppress that inflammation. And I put them on doxy for 14 to 30 days before the treatment. You know, we know the anti-inflammatory properties, but you're also changing that cross-linking. You're softening that meibum and you're giving more benefits to those treatments. Then post-treatment, we leave them on a course of topical anti-inflammatories for a week. And then finally, we're going to maintenance lid scrubs. And not everybody's going to do it every day, but I've been a big Wednesday, Sunday guy. And patients seem pretty compliant with that. When they see the Wednesday, Sunday, do a lid scrub, and they're embracing that. And we're really seeing patients 18 months to 2 years out now that are still having positive impact.
That's awesome. And that's after a single treatment, Shane.
Single treatment, yeah.
That's excellent. That's excellent. That's the first time I've heard about the pre-treating with doxy, Shane, before any of the advanced warming and evacuation technologies. That's an awesome tip. Shane, before we kind of wrap up here, we have a few more minutes. Share with us what excites you in the ophthalmic lens space, because I know that in your practice, you're really providing a full scope of care. That's not only the services that you're providing, but that's also the durable medical equipment, specifically glasses. Tell me some of those technologies that are exciting you.
Well, as a 51-year-old, all the progressives were a struggle for me. But X series from Essilor came out. That's the first one I've been able to put on comfortably.
It's great.
It provides that kind of all-over range of vision that I've been after for a long time. And I know there's probably other similar products from other manufacturers. That's the one I'm most familiar with. NeuroLens is filling a bigger and bigger role in our practice. And, you know, I know some people are like, every patient needs it. And I don't know that that's necessarily true. But, gosh, we're seeing it. Long computer users, that kind of brow ache, headache at the end of the day. We're seeing it benefit our migraine sufferers. We're also seeing, and I say this with a very small N number, 3 or 4, but that post-concussive, you know, near point issue, that is a great place for NeuroLens. And those patients just need some relief to get back to functioning. Those are big in the ophthalmic space, but I'm also seeing kind of these bridge lenses that, hey, you're not quite really a presbyope, maybe you're 38 or 40, but because of that 13 hours of screen time, you're showing symptoms. And there's lenses evolved to work in that way. And then don't forget contact lenses. I mean, we sometimes want to move past that, but gosh, the new treatments, you know, allow us to better address dry eye. We're seeing improved multifocal contact lens technology. I'm fitting more and more patients in multifocals. We kind of talk about that third, right? And we think about all these neat things, diagnosing, treating disease. But what I always talk about in my practice, we do the day-to-day stuff, and that's where our disease population comes from. So you want to do that the best you can. And even in this rural area that I live in, offer patients the highest quality contacts and glasses. Have a solution if they say no, but this is what patients identify you with. Even if they don't purchase it, they want to know that you're offering them the latest technology.
Yeah, Shane, I can hear it with the way you describe it. Because ultimately, I think with any business, I think we're healthcare providers first, but we always have that kind of nonstop curiosity on where we see those gaps in patient care, what can we do to fill some of those gaps? And that's where a lot of these newer solutions are coming into play, even the diagnostic and the therapeutic world. And I think it's just awesome how you embrace all facets of this to actually improve that patient experience. I think it's fantastic.
Yeah, I think for primary care, for optometry, the next 10 years, you hear a lot of questions, but it really has the potential, and I think will be so exciting for us. We're going to move into roles and ways to improve patient care and satisfaction we've never thought of.
Shane, bless you on that. With that said, it's really time to wrap up. It's always just an awesome opportunity to spend a little time with you, Shane, kind of hear what you're doing in your practice and hear how much things are evolving and as fast as they are. I was on a call last night with optometry students, and really where they are right now, like even if they're graduating this May or if they're graduating in the next 2, 3, 4 years, there's just so many things that are coming out of the companies that we interact with that are just going to fundamentally change the way that we care for patients. I just think it's an awesome time to be in optometry. And thank you for sharing your perspective on it, Shane.
Thanks for having me.
And thank you all for joining us for this episode of the OI Show.